All right. We're going to move on to our guest that we have on the phone. And I want to make sure that I don't pronounce her name wrong.
Dr. Dorothy Sluss is our guest for today.
Dr. Dorothy Sluss, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me with you today.
Okay. Could you, by introducing yourself, give your title and organization and give us some background on the organization?
Well, I'm a professor at James Madison University, and I study play. And I'm currently the president of the International Play Association USA affiliate. We are part of the World International Play Association, and our mission, if you will, is to promote the child's right to play.
Okay.
And I had asked you if you could explain that a little bit, because I think with all the focus on testing and academics lately, we really are losing the idea that children's work, so to speak, or what an important aspect of children's development is play. So can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Absolutely. Right now we're seeing several barriers to play. One that is evident in almost every home is technology, of course. Because children are spending way too much time in front of the screen and not outside. Another major barrier to play is poverty and violence. One in five children, or 21% of the children in the United States, live in poverty. And when they live in unsafe neighborhoods, they stay indoors. And we see streets that are void of children. We see silent streets, not just silent playgrounds, but silent streets. So we have to change those barriers so that all children have access to play. There are several groups that are trying to promote the child's right to play, along with IPA USA. One is the Association for the Study of Play, TASP, that is devoted solely to looking at research on play. Another group that really focuses on play is the Alliance for Childhood. Because we must eliminate the barriers, but we must help people understand that there are barriers to play. All children are not allowed to play or have equal access. It's also interesting, and Olga Jarrett, my colleague from Georgia State University, has completed a lot of research in the area of recess and recess deprivation. We have children who are sitting in classrooms for 8 hours a day without being able to decide what they're doing. They don't get that 15-minute break mandated by the federal government. They're sitting in classrooms taking those tests that you just talked about.
And can we just pause there for a moment? Because I was really struck by that phrase, decide what they're doing. Play does give children this level of control that they have in so few other times of their lives. Is that the key, or what are some of the keys to child development that are involved in play?
Well, it's interesting because for over 100 years, people have studied play as a way that children learn, based on their observations. We now know, based on neurological research, that actually play grows the brain. The part of the brain that is particularly engages in executive functioning for the body is located in the frontal lobe section. And those frontal lobes seem to develop, if you will, or grow during play. And that's, you know, in the past we would say play's good because children play together. They actually transmit the culture. Where do you learn? Who tells you you can't play? We transmit our culture through play. As children learn from other children what they can and can't do. We learn games from other people. Our culture, if you will. So we know the social part is great. And we can watch children engage in physical activity when they play versus when they're sitting in front of a TV. But we now know that it's not just good for the brain. It actually grows the brain. When children laugh, the chemicals that are released, play involves total growth for the child. And there's no other place that allows it to happen in the same way. And so there's nothing more powerful for children than play. And some researchers have looked at the fact that play is adaptive. It's how humans, as we develop, part of the reason we play is because we adapt to our society. When you want to know how to do something, you explore it, you play with it. And that's how we learn. And that's why only the higher level mammals play.
Doctor, let me jump in. I want to ask your organization, how old is your organization? How long have you been at this? And how, if you do, to what extent are you working with school districts across the country to help them understand the benefits of play on many different levels, from the physical aspect, from the mental development aspect? It sounds like it's very beneficial, and we've been seeing a trend away from providing more opportunities in play. So how long have you been at this work, and how are you working with the school system infrastructures across the country to restore more playtime?
You brought up a really good point. Our organization has been around for about 30 years. It started, I'm going to be embarrassed here, but I think it was 1970 when it started.
Okay.
This is something that should know, right?
That's okay. there's a lot of things I don't know as a talk show host.
We'll look it up, and we'll put the information on our blog. So it's about 30 years old, and as far as advocacy with other states or with schools, districts?
Well, this was the point of our topic at our meeting last night, in fact. You know, how do we have a stronger voice for children? Because it's one thing to meet and talk about why this is good for children and what we should be doing, but it's another thing to be able to help people use this at a local level to inform what goes on down the block. One of the things that has occurred is that we are tracking which states mandate recess and which states encourage recess, because this is huge. Dr. Jarrett has noted that the amount of recess that children get is highly correlated with their socioeconomic status, and that inner-city children receive less recess, and some schools are even built without playgrounds, than children who are out in the suburbs in more affluent areas. So it's very interesting in terms of who gets play. So how do we get this word out? Well, one of the things we've just done is IPA, in association with the U.S. Play Coalition located at Clemson University, has published a brochure on play that we're in the process of distributing free of charge to local groups. So if you go to either our website or the Clemson University, U.S. Play Coalition at Clemson University, you can find materials available to support the play cause. But I do think you've made a point that we struggle with this. How do we really create a force to encourage play throughout the United States?
Well, doctor, let me jump in again, because we're going to go to a break in about a few seconds. And so I want to ask you, with regard to, you mentioned there's even less opportunities in urban settings than there is in more rural settings. Now, I know under No Child Left Behind, which was initiated under the Bush administration, the focus has been on accountability, and therefore we've gotten to this high-stakes testing environment. But prior to that, so it sounds like this has been going on for a while. So you're saying that even prior to this high-stakes testing environment, that opportunities for play were being diminished as well already?
Absolutely. If you talk to people about how much recess time they have, and recess, think about this, recess is the only time during the day when children can choose who they talk to, who they play with, what they do or don't do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the only time. And if you look at schools around the world, Australians, children in Japan, children have much more time for recess. So when did this start? I think in the 80s, when we looked at what works from the 80s to this point where we are now at 2013, I think we've seen a steady change in valuing recess.
Okay.
And how much recess children receive.
Let me ask you to pause right there, because we're going to take a break. We thank you so much for being with us here on the Education Town Hall. Stand by. And folks, we're glad you're along with us as well. I guarantee if you stay with us, we will be right back. Thank you.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
We Act Radio, powered by Ethical Electric. Do something.
My name is Jamira Bullock, and I'm a student at Beloit Senior High School.
My name is Wallace Bright, and I'm a student at Beloit Senior High School.
My name is Victoria Harper, and I'm a student at Beloit Senior High School.
My name is James Hill, and I'm a student at Beloit Senior High School.
We've been talking with our peers across the District of Columbia, and we discovered that a lot of them are talking about how they believe that we are not being provided the high-quality education that we know we need and quite frankly deserve.
They are talking about students in other jurisdictions who are, for the most part, learning and being supported in modern facilities and have access to 21st century technology.
We're hearing them say that there are actually three public school systems in the district, DCPS West, DCPS East of the River, and public charter schools.
They are saying things like, we have been subjected to too many experimental models, unproven educational fads, and countless changes in philosophy and direction.
Some students are talking about how they feel that some of those in charge of our education system talk the good talk about reform and use all the other buzzwords, but at the end of the day, don't really give a damn about academic achievement for all.
Worst of all, everyone is talking about how we don't even have any voice in the public discourse around the direction of our education system.
Until now, because we all listen and share our views on the education town hall, we are thankful that the host, Thomas Bird, believes that we should have access as well as a megaphone to talk back to the powers that be in the district and in halls of Congress. Join Thomas Bird every Thursday at 11 a.m. for the education town hall, 1480 a.m. Listen live online at weactradio.com.
Hi, I'm Denise Rolark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and you've asked whether I think a show on education is a good idea for the District of Columbia, and I would give an unequivocal yes, it is. Information is power, we always know that, but information about education, resources, the politics, the finances, the what our young people could and should be achieving and what should be taught in the classroom is an exceptional. You can't talk enough about it, let me just say that. And I'm so glad that you are having the show. Continue to do the good work that you're doing. And folks out there, you just keep listening. If there's something you don't hear on the show, I'm sure that the folks here would love to hear from you. And make sure it's a topic for an upcoming show. So keep on listening.
You're listening to We Act Radio, WPWC 1480 AM, broadcasting live from Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in D.C.
All right, we're now back live. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall. This is your host, Thomas Bird, and we have the honor, pleasure, and privilege of having on the line with us Dr. Sluss, who is the president of the International Play Association. She's also professor at James Madison University in the great state of Virginia. Thank you for being with us today on the Education Town Hall, Dr. Sluss.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always love to talk about play.
Okay. Listen, we've only got a little time left. You can stay with us until 11:30, correct?
Yes.
Right. I wanted to ask about older kids and their need. Is there any emphasis or is there any plans to try to advocate for more play opportunities for older kids as well? Because I know you focus on the younger students. So what about the older students?
Well, you've really, I don't know how I've answered your questions because I sometimes start talking about play and don't know where to stop.
Okay. Well, since we don't have a short time, so try to be as concise with your responses.
Okay, I will. Older children need to play also. Because play is adapted for younger children doesn't mean that we stop playing. Older children, in fact, middle childhood age children, those children from grade 4 up through grade 8 and 9 need places to play. If we had more playgrounds where we had places where older children could play, obstacle courses, for example, we wouldn't see so many problems with children hanging out and turning to games. Mm. Because what's the alternative? Where can children play? If you look at playgrounds, they tell you if you're higher than 3 feet, you can't enter the playground. So
right.
Where do we have a place for children?
Correct. That's something we definitely need to address. And I hope you will come back on the show at a future date. But before we come to the end of our segment here, I also wanted to ask about, you know, we've talked a lot about recess, but what about the actual school day for the youngest children? You know, with this emphasis on filling in those bubbles, kids are not playing during their, when I was in kindergarten, we played. What about that?
That's an excellent point that you're making, because children learn through play, but they become creative. They inspire. We know that before children can look at a letter A and know that it makes an ah sound, that they have to be able to use a piece of wood to make an airplane, to pretend. Because that abstract thinking doesn't occur in an isolated situation. Children develop abstract thinking through pretending, through engaging in play, where this stands for something else. It's a signifier for an object. They develop their ability to engage in abstract thinking. We are stopping their development in terms of creativity and in terms of abstract thinking when we put them in front of a worksheet, which is actually a type of assessment. Mm-hmm. For example, I share with my students sometimes, I give them, half of them, a worksheet that with a picture of an apple and half of them an apple. And I ask them to look at, complete the worksheet, the color, color the apple, whatever. And then to look at the apple and to eat it and to smell it and to taste it. How do you learn? We learn through our senses and we learn through processing. We don't learn through an assessment process.
Dr. Celeste, let me ask you, because I'm trying to get as much in as possible real before we end this segment. You're the president of the International Play Association, so I assume there are member entities involved with your association. So I would like to know, is there any group, organization, nonprofit, or what have you, that's a part of your network work that is here in the District of Columbia?
Well, IPA is a national organization, so I'm sure we have some members, do we? But we don't have state organizations. That's a really good idea, and I'll take that back to the board.
Okay. I mean, because this, you have a friend in the Education Town Hall. We agree with the concept that young people need to have play opportunities. And so we want to get this translated into the policymakers. We want them to understand the need and the administrators who set schedules and all that, because it's vitally important that we do this. And so we have a motto at this station and we have radio called Do Something. And so we want to talk about things, but we also ultimately want to get to action. And so we want to actually translate this down to the grassroots level. Okay, how do we mobilize and get more play in the school? So I think that's what we want to talk about as we go forward from here.
Well, I think that you made an excellent point. And as I said, we were talking about that last night. I think the next step, and my concern is that we're meeting once a year or twice a year or going to the World Organization and conferences is not enough. We have to do something.
Okay.
And that's where we are now poised to move forward with the next step. And that's taking this to the principals and to the superintendents, and so that we can ensure and guarantee that every child who goes to school has an opportunity and the right to play.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
We'll make sure that your information is on our blog so that we can share that with listeners, and let's keep in touch about this, and we can have a future segment to explore it some more.
I hope that by the next segment that I can tell you we've made some movement towards establishing some state organizations so that we can move forward with this.
Yes, that would be great.
Excellent.
Dr. Sluss, we thank you so much for being with us today. Dr. Sluss is the president of the International Play Association. We thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on the Education Town Hall. And we want to have you come back as soon as you would love to come back and share updates with us and to talk to us offline about how we can be of help and assistance in this very important endeavor.
Well, you are an advocate for children, and that's the first step.
All right. Thank you.